This is Ralph Nader, and you're listening to Radio Powered by the People, KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and across the globe at kpfk.org.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
I'm going to tell you a number of things, but you really only have to remember two words. Governments lie. Governments lie. I'm not just the American government.
You're tuned into The Signal, where conversations meet convictions and stories shaping our democracy come alive right here at 3 p.m. Today we're actually sitting in for our colleagues at the Lawyers Guild and my old friend Jim Lafferty and Maria Hall. But I'm not going to be the only one here today, because today we're going to actually open up the lines, give you all the opportunity to join us, to engage with us, to talk to one another, and we want to hear from you. Now, let's set up the context here. Let's talk about why we're opening up these lines. And it's something that I think everybody who tunes into KPFK is aware of, these ongoing issues that we have here. In recent weeks, a growing number of analysts, journalists, and former government officials have warned us that the United States is showing clear signs of drifting towards authoritarianism. Authoritarianism under Donald Trump's leadership. According to The Guardian, more than 340 former national security and intelligence officials have concluded that the country is moving towards what they call competitive authoritarianism, a system where elections and institutions still exist but are manipulated to favor those in power. Reports from Amnesty International and the Center for American Progress echo these concerns, pointing to the administration's aggressive purge of career civil servants, the targeting of political opponents, and the dismantling of safeguards designed to ensure checks and balances. Now, that's just to get us started. And if you want to get ahead and get in on that, ahead of the crowd, 818-985-5735. You'll hit that option one. It'll take you straight to the studio, and you'll be able to join us shortly. Now, it goes without saying, folks, we expect you to be respectful. We expect you to be courteous. I dare say for some of you, professional even. We want to hear smart, intelligent, engaging issues related to this topic and beyond. This is not a soapbox moment. Well, mine is perhaps for me, but that's okay. I'm going to take host privilege here and moderator privilege and say, well, I'm the guy on the microphone. But we do want to invite you all. My name is Armando Gudiño. I normally broadcast on Saturdays at 12 p.m. with a program we call The Signal with Dino. I go by Dino around these places. And again, today they brought us in. And if you're wondering, wait a minute, this guy doesn't sound like Jim, doesn't sound like Maria. Well, again, we're visiting their time slot as they take a minor break. But it's not only going to be me. It's going to be you, the audience, here to comment and engage with us on these topics that we'll be covering today, which includes the rise of authoritarianism here in this country. And in particular, you know, we had historic marches this past weekend. I want to hear what you thought. Were you there? Did you participate? What were your observations? You know, across multiple sources, experts describe a pattern that mirrors other global declines in democracy. Part of the reason why we had these important protests, attacks on the free press, politicization of law enforcement and the courts. increased surveillance of dissenting voices. We now see reports that highlight how labor unions, for example, and civic organizations have emerged as key sources of resistance, arguing that the collective actions remain one of the few remaining counterweights to growing executive dominance. Taken together, these developments portray a country that is in a democratic stress test. While supporters argue Trump's moves reflect strong leadership, their supporters at least, indeed, critics warn that they represent an unprecedented consolidation of power. We've not seen this here before. The larger question now facing those of us that are seeing this for what it is, a rise to authoritarianism, in fact, not even a rise, we're there, is whether these trends mark a temporary political movement, a temporary political moment, or a deep structural shift towards a much more long-term authoritarian rule. So the questions we're asking is, how are these institutions, how are our communities, how are our citizens, residents, and others responding to this growing movement on the part of the current regime and its supporters? How are we responding to defend our democratic norms? This past weekend, the United States witnessed one of the largest coordinated demonstrations in recent history as millions joined the nationwide No Kings protests that happened this past weekend, Saturday, October 18th. Organizers estimate that over 5 million people, and I've heard numbers that are far larger than that, took to the streets in more than 2,600 locations. Major cities like New York and Los Angeles, small cities and towns across 50 states. We're talking places in the Midwest, places in the South. The movement now is in a second wave that has been described as a broad rejection of what participants call authoritarian tendencies in a government that seeks to dismantle, destroy democratic values. I want to hear from you. I want to know what you thought of the protests, what you experienced if you were out there among the incredible 2,600 cities. Look, we cover Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, San Diego, Ridgecrest. By my estimates, that's somewhere north of 14, 15 million people. Now, I'm not saying that 15 million people are listening to us right now, maybe just 14,900,000. But I know many of you out there who are our listeners were participating in these events. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, hit that option one, it'll take you straight to the studio and join me. I want to hear from you all. Right now, here are a few takeaways about the protest, about what happened this past weekend. Right, the sheer reach of the No Kings protest surprised many observers, with rallies being held in nearly every state. The turnout marked one of the largest single day mobilizations since the early 2020s. What stood out the most, perhaps, was the variety of locations. Demonstrations occurred not only in coastal cities, but they occurred in rural counties, rural cities, including, and this is something that must not go unnoticed, unrecognized, including in counties and other locations that previously lean conservative. Some participants expressed that they joined not out of partisanship, but out of concern for the erosion of checks and balances. So takeaway one, what does the scale and diversity of this participation tell us about the political mood in the country today? A few more. Takeaway two, of the protests happened that happened this past weekend. How are protesters defining their message and how is the government responding? Marchers carried signs and banners declaring everything from no kings to the proverbial, the power belongs to the people, framing their protests as a stand against the concentration of power, and in particular, the executive branch. Organizers cited issues like mass deportations, which we've covered in this station, I'm sure on Jim's show and my show, many, many times. The environmental deregulation, the political intimidation that is happening, all evidence of this creeping, horrible vine that is authoritarianism. The White House dismissed the protests as insignificant, while some Republican lawmakers labeled it anti-American. And finally, the third takeaway that I think is important for us to add and help us contextualize this topic today, as we start getting many of you already lining up to join 818-985-5735, option one. And remember, folks, we'll get to you. Be patient, be nice, be courteous, and please, let's stay to the topic. If any of you go off the rails, we're going to cut you off. I'm going to tell you now. Okay, so the third takeaway, as we prepare to take some of your calls, is this important question about, are these protests a short-term reaction? Or is it the beginning of a sustained civic engagement that could very well lead to significant reforms and changes in the coming months, years, and many would say hopefully decades and beyond? We have the midterm elections coming up, and of course we have the general elections coming up. Reports from major outlets, including our friends in public radio and other friends across the pond and the BBC, noted that the events were overwhelmingly peaceful. Marches featured families, students, workers, liberals, conservatives, young folks, old folks, artists, actors, all of them brought together with a desire for political expression. Despite the festive tone, many protesters voiced doubt about whether or not the demonstrations would lead to change. But the important thing is to recognize that they were there. Maybe some of them were new at this. So, those are our topics, right? What does the scale and diversity of participation tell us about the political mood in this country? How are protesters defining their message? And how is the government responding? And lastly, are the protests a short-term reaction, or is it part of a sustained movement that is beginning and that will go on and move on? Let's start off with Gigi in Pasadena. Gigi, welcome to this Wednesday edition of The Signal. What say you?
Government responding. And lastly, are the protests a short-term
Gigi,
reaction?
I need you to lower your radio volume.
Let's start off with Gigi and Cassidy.
Gigi, are you there? I need you to turn off your radio there. Okay, we can come back to Gigi. Let's go to Dave in Venice on line two. Dave.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. Talk to me now. Were you a part of the protest this weekend?
Yes, I was. I went to Venice Beach at Abbot Kinney and Venice Boulevard. You can't get more Venice than that.
You cannot truly get more Venice than that. And, you know, it's worth noting that, you know, Venice has a long, long history of good progressive values, strong activism, clearly a point of resistance in the greater LA County area. And what were your observations about the protests there?
It was very large. It was really good. We actually had one in June. We had the original one in June, but we weren't listed. and a gentleman was kind enough to take over. Not just a gentleman, but many women. Also, to take that to the next level, and there we ended up with quite a few people there.
You know, Dave, one of our listeners emailed a question and said, "Hey, Dino, are we still a nation of people, or are we being ruled like subjects?" What are your thoughts on that?
I am not a loyal subject of any king, but we've had no king since 1776, I believe, somewhere in there.
Right.
What is my take on that? I don't like authoritarianism, and I don't like being told what to do, and I don't like what's happening to our immigrants.
Right.
And how they're being harmed, I'm for the rule of law, and we actually have a criminal president. If we don't speak up now, it's going to get worse. And I'm afraid this is all a provocation, and to provoke a violent response. If we can all remain cool and remember Dr. King and Mahatma Gandhi, and so if we can just remember about nonviolence, and we will overcome them.
Right. And Dave, did you notice any challenges, any problems? You know, the protests across the country have been described as generally peaceful. Was that the case in Venice with you?
I noticed that there were other rallies going on with conservatives, especially the motorcyclists over in Westchester and stuff like that. I don't know what they were, if that was a response, but that's a little worrying to see, that. But I don't anticipate that there will be any violence as long as, that's why I was mentioning being provoked. Nobody wants to be provoked. And I noticed that. And so
Dave,
I'm hoping we don't have violence in the streets, that we can overcome by just sheer numbers and nonviolence.
And Dave, let me ask you one more question. So as
of
an
course.
Active member of your community and as somebody who, you know, was following the information that was coming out about the event, have you heard anything else since then? In other words, what I'm getting at is, do you think this is a responsive action, or is this, do you think, something that will lead to a sustained civic engagement?
Well, it's building. We're building. This is why we're having it. We're going to have it every month now, and it's going to build and build until it's reported. It's properly reported in our regular media. We know KPFK was there. I can't say much for our other wayward media, but
sure.
It's a process, we're going to build and we're going to build, and the next one is going to be more spectacular. But we need all our neighbors and everybody that are not into a king and not into authoritarianism and all those other things that people dislike. And we don't hate America. We love America. That's why we're out there. If we hated America, we wouldn't be there. We're out there because we love America, and we don't want being taken over by a king.
Thank you, Dave. Dave from Venice sharing his observations of the No Kings rally this past weekend. Let's go on over back to line one, Gigi in Pasadena. And reminder for all of you, please, lower your volume down. You should be listening to us on the phone if you're on hold so that you will be able to hear us there. Otherwise, you'll get this feedback. But, you know, Gigi in Pasadena, you know, Dave over in Venice was telling us that in his observations, everything went smooth, it was diverse, and in fact, he believes this is a movement that is building, and in fact, they now plan to have this on a monthly basis. What were your observations of the No Kings rally, and did you participate?
I did not participate. Listen to the radio, KPF, okay, and was the only one that had it on. My observation is I'm looking more at our leadership in our party, in the Democratic Party. I think that this should have gone out over all of the apps, all of the, you know, we have this technology that we're all holding in our hands right now, like I am talking to you. And I don't, my concern is the leadership at the top, to be honest, because you don't have to be multi-billionaires to get word out to have gone down each one, each representative in each state and been down there to get up and to speak, you know, in each state and to, you know, have a photo, you know, filming and running it constantly. I don't understand. The reach out from our party just seems to be almost non-existent, and that's what concerns me. I think the people are definitely, you know, doing, you know, their fair share. Excuse me, I'm almost 80, so it's a little hard for me to get out, but I do call people, and we have, I still love to play cards. We talk about what's going on in America all the time now, and we're extremely concerned, but our main concern is, I'm just concerned about the leadership. I just don't feel we have it. And like I said, there are many ways. You don't have to be able to put billboards in every state and whatever these billionaires do, but we have enough technology that we all should be getting word because KPFK was the only, maybe KPFA also, were the only, was the only station that I know of that did it full time, you know, the 7 or 8 hours. But this technology could have reached all, could reach sure. every Democrat. So that's my that's my take on it.
Thank you, Gigi. Thank you, Gigi, from Pasadena, who is concerned that the Democratic Party is still falling short. Stay on the line, folks. We're taking your calls today, 818-985-5735. We'll be right back. And those of you on the line, please continue to hold. We'll be right with you. Welcome back to this special edition of The Signal here at the 3 o'clock hour at kpfk.org, 90.7 FM, sitting in for our dear friends from the Lawyers Guild who are taking a break today. And we came in and are opening up the lines, talking with our audience, both on the line and via the World Wide Web, about what happened this past weekend, the No Kings protest that happened on Saturday, October 18th. You know, we started off with this conversation around some of the key takeaways, right? The scale and diversity of the participants and whether or not this is an indication, a temperature check on what is happening in the country today, the political mood, so to speak. We're talking about, you know, protesters defining their messaging around No Kings. And, of course, is this a long-term sustained civic engagement or is it a short-term reaction? You know, the opposition, as much as sometimes we hate to discuss, but, you know, I think it gives us added context, right? Some of those who oppose what happened this past weekend referred it to anti-American ideology, something that both Dave from Venice and Gigi in Pasadena commented on. They referred to the participation of folks as illegitimate or exaggerated, the fact that there was millions upon millions of people coming out into the streets. And, of course, they also described this movement as being part of some left-wing agenda, which is perhaps one of the more ridiculous ones. Evan from Galena, Ohio, which is a brisk 47.
Hey, how are you?
It's a brisk 40-some-odd degrees out there, right, Evan?
Mid-40s, yeah. It's, you know, winter's setting in.
Well, welcome to the Signal here in for the Lawyers Guild, and thanks for reaching out to us all the way from Ohio. So tell me, what was the No Kings protest like out there?
Well, ironically, I was unable to participate because I work out of state on the weekends at a Renaissance Festival, of all things.
So cool.
But I have participated in past rallies, and I did monitor the number of people that showed up. I had a lot of people reporting back to me, telling me how many people were there and what the atmosphere was like. We had over 10,000 people in Columbus, Ohio, which was the largest of them, but also six or seven very large rallies in both neighborhoods within Columbus and the suburbs. There were over 200 people in Tiffin, Ohio. Have you ever heard of Tiffin, Ohio?
No, I haven't. Tell me.
Exactly.
Fair enough.
And in the last New Kings rally back in June, there I did attend one in Wilmington, Ohio, which is a small town about two-thirds of the way between Columbus and Cincinnati, and they had about 300 people there. And that is the very heart of Trump country. It is the highest concentration of Trump supporters, voting-wise, of any county in the whole country, you know, surpassing even Wyoming. And there were close to 300 people there. So I think that it's a very good sign. I do take encouragement from it, but I've heard a lot of criticisms as well.
Tell me.
I've heard from people saying that the rallies are too white, they're too middle class, they're too bourgeois, they don't have a central set of demands, and they don't have an ongoing organizational plan. One friend of mine even said that any kind of a demonstration without those things is just warm bodies in proximity. And I would not want to be accused of somebody who discounts the importance of warm bodies in proximity.
Wow, okay.
But
totally.
I do think that there's value to them that goes way beyond that. It shows ourselves and the world that people are not taking this sitting down, that they are willing to exert some kind of effort to resist what's going on. And if you look at the signs that people have made, there are demands, and it's pretty easy to distill a consensus from among just the handmade signs as to what those demands are.
Sure.
And it's a pretty comprehensive list, but it's also a pretty strategic list. So my question is about next steps. I know that the Indivisible Organization and a couple of the others are talking about what to do next, how to do things differently the next time, and what kind of ongoing organizational efforts are needed. And I noticed that the mayor of Chicago was calling for a general strike.
Right.
That appeals to me because it seems like a solid action, a nonviolent action, a meaningful action, one that people will recognize, one that has historical precedent, one that can help consolidate support among labor, which, of course, the movement already has.
Right.
But when a union undertakes to do a general strike, a local strike, it takes a huge amount of preparation and organization. You've got to have a vote. You have to have a strike fund. You have to have contingencies. You have to have officers who are responsible for various logistical tasks associated with the care of the workers who are putting themselves at risk, et cetera. I'm wondering if Indivisible or some yet unofficial coalition of organizations that have participated thus far are really up to the task. I know the Democratic Party is not the answer. We can't look to them for leadership, although I think we should welcome their participation on an individual basis.
But let me, Evan, tell me why. I mean, you know, we had the same concern now expressed by two previous callers who shared similar sentiments. In your observations, why is the Democratic Party failing as much as they are, as bad as they are?
Oh, my gosh. Well, Franklin County, which includes Columbus and some of the suburbs, is notoriously nepotistic and corrupt. They pre-endorse candidates prior to the primaries, and they're always handpicked candidates that that toe the line, and the line is always just kind of milquetoast. There's never any room for progressive voices, and when you do have a progressive coalition, and we have had in the past on and off, that actually puts energy behind a truly progressive candidate who has real solutions to propose to some of the problems that we face in Central Ohio with regard to deteriorating education. Columbus schools are a mess. Affordable housing, again, there's a huge shortage of that. They get shut out. They get shut out of debates. They get ridiculed. Hundreds of thousands of dollars of campaign money gets spent against them by the Democratic Party itself, while they promote somebody who just is a friend of a friend and knows somebody and promises to do essentially nothing and proceeds to do exactly that once they're in office. The city council is majority appointed at this point because whenever an incumbent vacates a seat, they appoint someone to fill that seat, and then that person runs as an incumbent.
Right. So we're talking about a dysfunctional, disorganized, uncoordinated political party that is disconnected from working class constituents who just, they can't seem to put it together is what you're saying.
Right, right. And you do see prominent Democrats actually turning out at some of these rallies, and some of them even speak. Certainly during the Black Lives Matter rallies, we have the Congresswoman Joyce Beatty, a city council president, and county officials participating and even getting tear gassed in those rallies here in Columbus. But those are individuals acting in high visibility capacity. Those are not organizational efforts with resources behind them.
Sure.
So, I think that if there is hope for the party to play a constructive role in all of this, it will be as a result of constituent pressure. That's what these rallies help to do, is build that pressure. But I think we need to move on to some kind of direct actions as well that are strategic and well-planned and targeted, and probably targeted such that they are on a manageable scale for the resources we have at hand.
And relative to the locations where they are.
So that was my question. Is a general strike feasible? Are the organizations really up to putting such a thing together?
Sure. Well, you know what, Evan, I'm actually going to continue on that thread and ask our other callers to chime in on that. One of the things I really like about this format of radio, this format of public radio, is that, you know, oftentimes we are able to hear directly from you all, constituents, members of the community, who have such insightful information to share about what's happening on the ground. And that's Evan from Galena, Ohio, one of the more conservative parts of the country. I want to thank you for joining us on this special edition of The Signal. Stay with us.
I hope, Jim. Okay.
Evan, I'm going to get to more callers. Thanks a lot. We're taking your calls, 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735. Pick that number one. It'll take you directly to the studios. We have many of you lined up. We're getting emails. We're getting text messages. John from Burbank wrote in an email, "When a leader calls himself chosen, is that politics or prophecy?" Great question, John. We're taking your calls. My name is Armando Dino Gudino. I normally broadcast on Saturdays at 12 noon. Check us out. Shameless plug, right? My producer's saying, make sure you plug the show. But we're sitting in for our friends at the Lawyers Guild. We're taking your calls. We're talking about the protests that happened this past weekend, the No Kings protests that happened across the country. We're talking millions of people, without a doubt, in just about every corner of the nation. And we're exploring what are some of the takeaways, the scale and diversity of participation. What does that tell us about the political mood in the country today? We're exploring this issue of whether or not this is a short-term reaction or will it turn into a sustained civic engagement? Now, one thing I do want to share, you know, some of our friends in the civil liberties community have expressed alarm. And listen to this. Some of the concerns expressed go back to this issue, this idea that large-scale protests may, in fact, trigger expanded government surveillance or law enforcement responses that maybe will go into hyperdrive that we've seen already some hint of and will be brought to scale as our communities organize and take to the streets. For instance, concerns were raised about the use of facial recognition software, drones, phone hacking, and cell site simulators to monitor demonstrators that are organizing these events. These are real issues that, again, folks in the civil liberties community are asking these questions. So these are the things that we're talking about today. 818-985-5735. Harold from Santa Barbara on line one. Harold, what were your observations of this past weekend's protests, the No Kings protests?
It was heartwarming. And more importantly, and I got to give a shout out to Ohio. More importantly, I'm thinking like the Civil Liberties Union. Now that they see the numbers, I'm scared of their future response to the crowds.
Tell me more. What? So did you go to any of the protests out in the Santa Barbara area?
No, I did not. What I'm referring to is that next time, how are the police going to respond? Are right. they going to send in goons? Are they going to instigate? So it's a matter of being a little concerned
Absolutely.
About their reaction.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, those concerns have existed for, you know, I think way before even, you know, I was born and I'm up there. And certainly since I've been here at this network, the Pacifica Radio Network, I remember hearing about this 20, 30 years ago. And today, as I think it was Gigi from Pasadena who said, look, why didn't we have a lot more information going out there, more broadcast, more coverage, given the technology that we're using. Well, the flip side of that coin, of course, is that with that kind of expansive access to microtechnology and other formats of broadcasting come more opportunities for surveillance. So it sounds like, Harold, you're in partial agreement that maybe this is one area that we in the broadcast community, you all out there in the communities who are supporting and participating in these events need to be a little bit more careful with.
Exactly. Look what happened with 911. They escalate and we de-escalate. I mean, like John F. Kennedy said, what can you do for your country? But now it's more as what can I get from my country? But that is my concern.
Harold from Santa Barbara, concerned about the expansion of a surveillance government. Thank you, Harold, for joining us. 818-985-5735. We're taking your calls about this past weekend's activities, the No Kings protests. We have great calls coming in. Folks who, you know, as I said earlier to Evan from Ohio, you know, what I love about these calls and when we open up these lines is you get to hear folks on the ground who are making these observations and share sometimes very insightful observations that I think would serve the organizers of these events to better understand how to improve their operations. Steve in L.A. on line two. Steve, did you participate in any of the protests? Steve, you there? Okay, let's go to Leslie, back to the beautiful city of Venice. Leslie on line three. Leslie?
Yes.
So, Leslie, were you able to participate in any of the protests that happened in Venice?
Yes. I went to the protest at Venice and Abbot-Kinney, and it was a fantastic event. And it was one of the best things that I've ever been to.
Wow.
It was completely joyous. It was it was very festive. And I think it's exactly what's needed right now. Because you don't want in sight. There was only one police car that drove by within an hour and a half, didn't stop. And every time the lights turned, everyone would cross the crosswalks. And it was like people were in the median. It went on for, there were thousands of people there.
Wow.
And it was fantastic because there's absolutely no reason to break it up. And I think that's what we need right now. We just need to see more people out doing what they believe. And I did hear that downtown LA, there were speakers, but, you know, they were talking, you know, some of those speakers were saying defund the police and, you know, screw ICE and all this stuff, which I think is inciting.
Okay.
And I think there's probably many ways to fight. I'm all for, you know, nationwide strikes. But I do think that it was the first event that I've been at where it felt right. And it was also very well organized. They had people with bullhorns that would say, look, people get off the street, stay on the sidewalks, you know, go, all right, go down a little bit. You know, it went for blocks and blocks. And it was, I thought it was really powerful. The signs were amazing. And I think that after that event, more and more people will come out.
Leslie, before we...
So that's just my take on it.
Sure.
You know, like, I don't want to hear another... I just don't think it serves any purpose to have an angry event. You know, it definitely needs, you know, we need the, you know, the political party to step up.
Leslie...
I mean, that's where I have a problem.
Got it. And let me ask you something, Leslie, before we take a break. And please, I want to invite all our listeners to join us for this important conversation, 818-985-5735. We're going to take a brief break. But, Leslie, I want to ask you one question before we go to break.
Okay.
Is there a middle ground, right? On the one hand, I think sometimes messaging can be difficult and can even sometimes push people away because I don't want to be a part of a more, you know, dare I say, vulgar message or angry message. But then there are those who say, look, this is absolutely necessary. They're kidnapping people off the streets. They're eroding our civil liberties. And, you know, so is there a middle ground for you? Is there?
No. Okay. And I'll tell you why.
Please.
I think we've already seen the reaction from this government to, you know, first of all, at this kind of event, you can't address all the problems.
Sure.
But people turned out, and from what I heard, because I know people that went to the different ones, they said they loved it. I mean, it was like the one at Montana and Ocean Avenue, which is on the west side. You know, it's Santa Monica.
Right, right.
It was huge, and there was music, and there were speakers. But those speakers weren't angry. They were basically organized. And I just think that it reminded me of the 70s. You know, it just
enough.
Was like, show up, just show up. And a lot of people don't show up.
Sure.
Or
sure.
Haven't shown up. And the last, you know, I mean, I have a problem. I have a problem with saying defund the police.
Sure.
I think it just incites all kinds of negativity. And it doesn't work.
Leslie,
you know, so that's my feeling.
Wonderful. Thank you, Leslie from Venice, who is expressing concern about the messaging, about sometimes it being too aggressive and what is the middle ground. She, for one, feels that there shouldn't be one. Leslie, thank you for joining us from Venice Beach. We're going to take a brief break. I want to invite you all to continue calling in 818-985-5735. Hit option one to join us. We'll be right back with Philip and Steve.
To the movie, and I go Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long, time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother.
Welcome back to this special edition of The Signal. I'm your host, Dino. Normally, we broadcast on Saturdays at 12 noon. I want to invite you to join us this Saturday. We'll be talking about wage theft, this endemic problem, this issue that impacts us all in one form or another. And for those of you that don't know, and just to put it in perspective, L.A. County is the wage theft capital of the nation, with an average of $28, $30 million stolen every single week. That'll be this Saturday, rather, at 12 noon on The Signal here on KPFK. My name is Armando Dino Gudino, joining you today during what normally is the Lawyers Guild, but you know, our friends at the Lawyers Guild, my good old buddy Jim Lafferty, is taking a break. And we decided to open up the lines and invite you all to join us. I want to remind you how important it is to preserve our license, to be respectful, no curse words. You know, let's have an intelligent, well-thought-out conversation about this issue that is the No Kings rally and what happened this past weekend. As I said in my opening comments, in recent weeks, a growing number of analysts, journalists, and former government officials have warned that the United States is showing clear, undeniable signs of drifting towards authoritarianism under Trump's leadership and what some would say lack thereof. So we've been talking about what does the scale of diversity and participation in the No Kings rally tell us about the political mood in the country today. What does this movement indicate? Is this a short-term reaction or is this a sustained civic engagement? We heard from several callers as far away as Galena, Ohio, our friend Evan, who joined us, which, by the way, that's a rather conservative part of the planet. But, you know, Evan is saying, hey, Dino, we had as many as 300 people show up in one of the most, if not the most conservative part of Ohio. And that is a very revealing fact here, folks. It's telling us that the discomfort, the disdain, the disgust, let's call that the triple D, that Trump is prompting in all folks across the country is becoming more and more measurable. Philip in Newport Beach, Philip on line four. Philip, what was your observations? Did you attend any of the protests this past weekend? Philip, you there? Did we lose Philip?
Here, I can
hear. Hey, Philip, I can hear you.
Good. Yeah, it was very, very faint. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a 67 white guy from Newport Beach, very conservative place. Grew up there after being born in Compton. But the rallies that I've attended have gotten bigger and bigger, and I think they serve a lot of good purposes for all of us. But I do agree with, especially the woman in Ohio, that without the organization, I mean, they're just going to be feel-good things, and I think that's what they're going to count on, the administration, this fascist stuff that's going on. The only way that I think it's going to work is the organization, some kind of organization where I guess it's a general strike on things. You know, just like Disney got the word once Jimmy Kimmel was silenced, and all of a sudden they had to reverse course because they felt it immediately. Once the corporate and oligarch-style people understand that it's not in their interest to tie their wagon to this fascism, right, we can change it. And I think that's what we have to keep forefront.
Got it.
Because ultimately, we all have the power together. We are stronger. We are together. It's just together. That's the biggest issue, right? Together.
Yeah.
Philip, how to keep us together, right?
And I appreciate the sentiment. Thank you, Philip, for joining us. We're going to take a few more calls before we sign off. Philip from Newport Beach, thank you. Steve from L.A., I think you were on earlier. We might have missed you there. But we're coming up on the closing of the show, so let's try and make the comments a little quicker. Steve, what say you?
Okay, thank you for taking the call. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Steve. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks. I think that's one of the problems with the Democratic Party is, it's the one word, money. You know, a lot of politicians have been bought off by different organizations and by the billionaires and by various interests, and so they have pretty much folded and said, "Oh, I'm going to do this because I have to," you know. And so that's what's happening. But I think you cannot ignore 7 million people, and we are the fourth branch of government, the people, and we're just standing up and saying, no, we're not going to take this anymore. And it doesn't matter what anyone says, what the ACLU says about the crackdown's going to be more, and all of it. It just means that we have taken our own fate in our own government into our hands because we've had to. And that's the point I'm trying to make, and also about the point about money, that money drives all of the politics. So you have realize that when you ask questions about why is the Democrat Party abandoned? That's why.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate the call, and thanks for being so patient and coming back online once we temporarily lost you. So Steve from L.A. is letting us know, let's keep an eye on the money and the big role that money plays in these political climates that we're in, both on the Democratic side, as much as we do look at the other side, the opposition side. And so let's move on. Peter in Santa Monica. Peter, I'm told that you have a very interesting question. What say you?
Yes, how are you? You know, I can barely hear you. Tell your operator to turn up your volume there. Hey, I was at the Santa Monica rally. Were you there?
I was not at the Santa Monica rally, but tell me, Peter, what was your observation?
Well, I heard the woman talking about how huge it was, and it wasn't. It was a bust. It was half the size it was. I was at the one in June. And I'll tell you, there were some counter-protesters, and it started kind of a ruckus there. So I'm not quite sure what she was talking about.
Well, to be fair, Peter, she actually was in Venice.
Oh, shoot, no wonder. Okay, thank you. That was all concerned. So, it was kind of a bust, but there was counter-protesters, and at the end it was peaceful, so that was good. I got a question, though.
Yeah.
People say no king, and I don't understand that, because if Trump was a king, they wouldn't be able to protest.
Sure.
How does that work?
Sure. You know, Steve, I'm sorry, Peter. I think
my
observation of that, or I should say my response to that, would be that it's my understanding that the no king reference came out of what Trump's own comment at one point a short while back at the beginning of his presidency, or within the first 6 months, in which he made a comment where he referred to himself as a king. And if memory serves me right, it had something to do with him questioning whether or commenting that some people want a king in this country. And it's my understanding that that's where that came from. Of course, it can also be seen as a metaphor. When you start consolidating power the way he is, when you start managing the other branches of government, and keyword managing the other branches of government, oftentimes the rise of authoritarianism leads to, some would argue, varying degrees of elements that are consistent with oligarchs, right? So,
well, I get what you're saying, but it's kind of silly, I think. And I'm a central guy. I'm center.
Sure.
I'm not really one side or the other. But I did notice people that I talked about there had like no sense of humor, and that's where this comes from.
Okay.
I think it's silly myself. things couldn't be better for me right now, I'll tell you that. And again, I'm a center guy, so I'll tell you that.
Well, you have a varying degree of optimism than I think others. You know, but it must be noted, organizers reported 5 to 7 million people, over 2,700 cities and towns. That's unprecedented. I mean, when my producer Nella reached out and said, hey, let's fill in for this 3 o'clock hour, and she shared a bunch of research with me, stuff that, yeah, I think we all noticed, read, heard. I even at that moment was still kind of caught off guard. I was like, wow, this is significant. So, and would
I would take that with a grain of salt, because I always, I told people I saw about 100 people Saturday. I'm Hispanic, by the way.
Okay.
And I saw 100 people at the rally, and that was just in my apartment alone. So, I take it with a grain of salt. Did you get that joke?
Fair enough.
I hope you did. Yeah. All right.
All right, Peter. Hey, man. Thanks, hey. Peter from Santa Monica, who is a bit more optimistic on the personal outlook. A little concerned about the hype, but in general, it sounds like we're not that far off in agreement that much is happening across the country. As we prepare to close out, we're going to take one more call. Guillermo from Los Angeles. We're going to make it short because we do have a sign-off process here on the signal. Guillermo from L.A., give it to me in 1 minute or less.
Yeah, really quick. How you doing? Thank you for answering my call.
Sure.
Yeah, listen, the lady that said that perhaps the message from the, No Kings rally was a little bit negative because you have people talking about ICE, et cetera.
Right. She thought it was too aggressive.
Everywhere in the country, not everybody knows what's going on. So we need to express what's happening in places like L.A., Portland, Chicago, et cetera. Now, Peter, he's like, Well, listen, my point is that 100 people said it was silly. Well, I'd rather have silly than civil war.
Fair enough. Yeah, of course.
But eventually, you might have to get to that. I don't know. But thank you for your program. And, I wish everybody love. And let's hang in there.
Hey, wonderful, man. Listen, I appreciate it, Guillermo. Thank you. And I want to thank all my guests and contributors and really co-hosts for today's episodes, because again, as I've said it before, and I'll say it again, when we open up the lines, today's episode really came through, and I want to thank the audience, because not only do you make this station what it is, but you are an example, a representative of the type of content that we share on the air, whether it's the Lawyers Guild normally broadcasting in this hour, or on my show, The Signal, on Saturdays at 12 noon. And this is why this station exists. And I want to thank you all and thank all the listeners who participated in our recent fund drive and for all your contributions. And I want to sign off with this, that, when we listen to our guests, when we listen to our co-host and audience, the No Kings protests demonstrated that millions of Americans remain willing to show up for democracy, for resistance, in a moment of political division. The question for listeners is whether this marks a passing wave of outrage or the beginning of a sustained civic engagement, a movement capable of reshaping the national conversation of power, accountability, and freedom. And I can tell you, I for one think, yes, that is possible. I want to thank our board engineer, D'Angelo, and our amazing producer, Arnella Nella Barbara, who really helps put this whole operation together and keeps me in line. And, of course, thank our friends at the Lawyers Guild for the opportunity to join us today. I want to do another shameless plug of my program on Saturdays at 12 noon this coming week, this coming Saturday at 12. We'll be talking about wage theft, about this serious problem that is wage theft at a scale of unprecedented levels. So join us Saturday at 12 noon. Thank you all for being here. Talk to you soon. Señor presidente, son los que quieren creerte y verte fuerte triunfar en nombre de la verdad.
I'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in, and especially thank those of you who pledged your support or renewed your membership to KPFK during this past fund drive. The support of generous listeners like you is what allows this listener-sponsored